This week's special clinic edition of the Swim Brief is brought to you by Chris DeSantis Coaching. Improve your coaching in as little as a couple hours with positive psychology. Go to chrisdcoach.com and just put a blog up today about shame. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in downtown coach.com and write me via the contact form. I'm going to be in Phoenix, Arizona next week talking about optimism as a skill, Pennsylvania, Mercersburg next month to do that and more. Book your talk and see improvement in your swimmers right away. This week I'm joined by the good old friend of the brief, Nico Messer. Nico has just crisscrossed the United States in search of swimming knowledge, attending clinics, and looking in on one of the top swimming environments in America. Nico and I catch up, hear about what he's been doing, and then we turn to what makes a good clinic, what's a good learning opportunity for coaches. Enjoy. Joining me from a hotel lobby as he crisscrosses the great American heartland, Nico Messer. What's up, Nico?
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. You've been a lot of places over the last month. Give everybody who's listening right now just like a little summary of where you've been and what you've seen here in the last month or so.
Yeah, well, as you said, I'm sitting in a hotel in a lobby, so we may get some background noises every once in a while. But after being away from the deck, from coaching for a couple weeks due to personal matters, I wanted to fully immerse myself again, go full in. So I actually flew out to Florida to Clearwater Beach, attended the International Swim Coaches Association, ISCA, their annual event, their conference. Which was cool because Pro Swim Workouts provided a scholarship for a young coach to attend that clinic for the first time. So that was really cool to meet that coach, just the overall clinic. It's more of like a school kind of setting, how they set up the room. It's a little smaller. I like that. I feel like being back in school a little bit. I think I'm more tentative that way. And then I actually flew out to Washington, went to the Ask a World Clinic, which is a fun event, not more so because there's so many people there. So it's more about meeting the people, actually talking to people. I probably missed quite a few talks just by hanging out in the lobby at the hotel there, or going to the bar and have a snack with someone and talk about some stuff and ideas. For myself, for Pro Swim Workouts, or just swimming in general. And then from there, I took my last trip. I went to Indiana, more precisely to Carmel, Indiana. So they have the GAIN swimming. And for those who don't know, GAIN is a concept by Coach Vern Gambetta. Who comes from the track and field but does a lot of strength and dry line training, and he has been working with a lot of club teams the past years. One of them is Carmel Swim Club and Carmel High School. They obviously been pretty good, especially girls. So I wanted to go there last year, but I couldn't go. So this year I didn't want to miss, and that one was a really, really good clinic. I'm really happy I did attend that one. A lot of good stuff, and that was more kind of like do it on your own. Like, they told you about the concept, but we were in the gym and actually doing all the stuff ourselves, so that was really cool. That's mostly what I've been up to. Now after that, I was supposed to be on a plane and get some days off in Florida, but Irma had other ideas about that, so now I'm actually waiting in a hotel in Indy to fly out.
So you've been around to all these places, and I think you started to get into some of the conversation of, you know, what was
So
you what you learned at each individual place. And I think one of the things you and I just really wanted to talk about in general is the idea of the coaching clinic and continuing education for coaches in general. And so, you know, I think one of my first questions for you, if you could answer it, is what things worked best at each stop along the way? Because I think it's easy. Obviously, I've made huge criticisms of ASCA. so we don't, and I think those criticisms are still as fair as they can be. Even in making those criticisms, I did acknowledge some of the reason why ASCA continues to exist. And I think it's exactly what you point out. It's just the sheer volume of people that continue to go there every year and year after year, and the value of being able to interact with that many other peers over the course of a weekend. But what, from your perspective, what worked best at each of the various stops that you went to?
Well, I think you brought up a few good points. You know, it is what you said. In one way, it is that for me, I'm never going to be able to meet that many coaches in one place, any time throughout the year, other than maybe a swim meet. But I wouldn't have that much time to maybe go and take a snack and talk over some food at someone than I would at the ASCA World Clinic. And it's not just, I mean, there are a lot of American coaches, but it's really a world clinic. And ASCA may be the guys running it behind, but that may be the part where a lot of people are not really happy with the clinic, because there are some things happening, I think, that could go better. And I think they realize that because people are more outspoken about it that they may have been about that stuff in the past. The other thing is, I feel like something that we've talked about a little bit before, maybe if you look at other industry outside of swimming, I feel like our clinics are kind of still not overpriced, but they're expensive for coaches to go to, because it's not just the cost of the clinic, it's actually if you have to travel across the country or even come from outside the U.S., you have to pay for a hotel, so it adds up really quickly. And you have to make that decision if you don't have a budget that goes with it. You have to make that decision if you're going to spend that money. So, and I just feel like actually meeting the people and having them in front of me, being able to go and maybe ask questions after they had a talk, or if I heard something about someone who's doing something and I'm not really sure what I can believe or what I should believe, and that guy is going to be there and I'm just going to go and grab him and actually talk to him for an hour. I think that offsets a lot of the value for me that I couldn't get anywhere else, much more than a lot of the talks, because I don't want to sound negative or something like that about that stuff, but it seems, and I guess I'm not the only one, that especially at ASCA, but at most clinics, we see the same people over and over speaking. And what I was kind of not so happy with a lot of those people, they seem to talk about the same thing year after year. And it may be exciting, you know, for some people that haven't heard it the year before. There may be something new that I can say, well, that wasn't there last year, but that's pretty much the same last year, just in a different context. And not to say that those are not good coaches, you know, Bob Bowman, Dave Durden, Dave Salo. I mean, those are all names that we do want them to share, we do want to see. But then again, at some point, I don't coach Michael Phelps, I don't coach Nathan Adrian. So, and it was the first time this year I'd ask it. I heard a lot of people say, well, I actually don't get to hear the people talk that I really would like to hear talk. The people that nobody really knows, but maybe that do exactly what I'm doing at my team. And I think that's the thing that probably is going to improve quality of the clinics for a lot of people if that is going to change. And honestly, I don't have an answer on how to do it, because it's probably hard to attract people if you don't have Eddie Reese, Bob Bowman, and Dave Saylor as like headline speakers, or ask people for that much money to attend. But that may be one solution to that, to have a change. And then, you know, what I get the most out of it, and I feel like even though it is things that I heard maybe the year before, I've heard somewhere else, and I'm not the one who sits in a talk and like takes a ton of notes. I try to listen and try to figure out what I can get out of the talk, and that's what I'm going to write down after. So I think a lot of people, like, they just sit in those talks and they take picture after picture from every slide, and they take a bunch of notes, and actually the notes are what's on the slide. And at the end of the talk, they don't really know what the talk was about, or they didn't really get the information because they were so worried about snapping a picture from the presentation or writing down everything. And the funny thing actually is if we talk ASCA specifically, I mean, they have a book coming out where you can find every talk that was in the clinic. So you don't actually have to do it. You can obviously have to buy it from them. That's part of the of the money deal. But I mean, you don't have to spend so much time not paying attention to actually what's going on, or have time to think about what's being said. And the other way, you know, there were a couple coaches that were like, well, I have a little handout here, and you're in the room with 300 other coaches, and they have like 20 handouts. So like, the people in the first few rows, they sprint to the front, grab the handouts, and obviously you don't get a handout. But then every coach that said that and emailed him, like most of them the same night or like the next morning, they emailed me back. They're like, oh, I'm extremely sorry, there wasn't enough handouts. Here's a PDF of that handout. So you can get all that stuff. Like, people want to share. That's why they go there. That's just kind of the thing that I feel that I don't like about it, but I do like a lot about it.
So let me jump in here, because I think you're bringing up a number of really good points. I think one of the things you said in the beginning, you know, certainly having big names is a big part of the business model of these clinics and getting people to attend. But the criticism that you bring up is one that I've also heard a number of times, which is, oh, you know, we're getting similar material to last year or even several years in a row. And that's actually one that I don't completely understand. If only from the perspective of, you know, out in the professional comedy world, right? There are some comics who, you know, they develop a stand-up routine and they go around and they tour and they tell their jokes and they do that. The best comedians are constantly coming up with new material. Because they know that if you've already been to one of their shows, that should you come back, you're not going to want to hear the same jokes. That they're not going to be, many of them will not be as funny when you sort of see them coming at you. And when you talk about coaches at that level, I just have to imagine that there are a lot of different things that they could talk about that would be really valuable. I mean, I know I'm not in that league, but I have been out to talk at some clinics and do some presentations in the last year. And I know all of those places, like I was out at that Midwestern swimming clinic last March. If they have me back, which I really hope they do, I'm going to do completely new material. I'm not going to present anything that's the same as the previous year, because that just doesn't seem to me to be professional, to be sort of taking a check and doing the same presentation year after year. I don't know what you think.
Well, I agree, you know, and at the same time, I understand some of it, you know. I understand, like swimming, we don't get a new freestyle every year. So it's like if you have a talk about freestyle, it is bound to be close to the same that it was last year. But what I think what the criticism is there, I understand that if you have the coach of the best freestyle in the world, that you may want to have him present it. But if he did it 2 years in a row and it didn't change because he's still doing the same because he's having success and that's fine, well, why don't take another coach? Maybe he does the same thing, but he will present it in a different way. And I'm not so worried if that is Dave Thurn, if it's Dave Saylor, if it's a coach from a club team that I wouldn't even know being a coach from outside the U.S. Because as I said, I think if it what you're going to get from it, because you're not going to see what Dave Thurn does with Nathan Adrian or Bo Bowman does with Michael Phelps, and you're going to take it and you're going to take it home and you're going to do that and you're going to end up with a guy that is exactly like Michael Phelps or Nathan Adrian. You're going to have to try to figure out, what do I actually think that goes with my coaching style? What can I do in the setting that I have, and what would like fit in what I already do, or what could I think about changing? What is different from what I do, what I'm hearing, that could help me improve, that could help me, my athletes improve? I think a lot of people, that's where the coaches fail, because they just want the stuff printed on a paper. This is solution A to get the result A. This is solution B to get result B. Take it, go home, do it, and get the results. And I think that's not working.
Yeah, I mean, I think putting all this stuff in context has to be an incredibly important part of everything. And, you know, I've joked with a lot of friends about the sort of post-clinic Eddie Reese-itis, which is like the swim coaches go to a clinic, Eddie Reese throws out one set that he does, and then hundreds of swim teams across America are doing that one set because coaches are thinking to themselves, well, this is, I mean, Eddie's the best, and
yeah,
you know, he's doing this, so I better do this, without thinking about like what is the context of what he's doing. And I know you and I don't want to belabor this point because I talked about it on last week's podcast with Joel Rawlings, and you brought it up before we started recording. But, you know, any kind of obsession over like, oh, Bob Bowman shared his workouts. Well, guess what? Those are workouts that Bob Bowman did for Michael Phelps, and you're not coaching Michael Phelps. So they're not in context for the coaching that you're doing.
I was talking with my friend Mark Hill, who's at Indiana now, and we were talking about the same thing. I'm like, well, you know, those workouts, they're good. I say that with the highest respect. I have a lot of respect for Bob Bowman. I had a lot of good discussion with him. But it's like, when he says you what Michael Phelps does, the guy goes 53 from a push and 100 fly in that workout that he shows you with a couple hundred flies and some easy in between. If you have a guy that goes a 100 or slower, it's not the same workout. It doesn't have the same effect. It's not gonna give you the same that it did for Michael Phelps. So I think just people don't want to understand that because they're gonna tell their kids, well, Michael Phelps did it. It has to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the broader issue here, which is continuing education for coaches. I mean, that is the point of these clinics, right? There's the point of all of these opportunities is that, you know, coaches can continue to learn. And as you point out, when you start adding up the whole cost, we get to sort of a classic swimming problem, which is the clinics in themselves are not that expensive, but when compared to many of the salaries paid in swim coaching, they are very expensive. I remember in when I was coaching in Denmark, you know, to send one coach to their aqua clinic, which they did quite differently from a lot of these American clinics in that they threw a lot of money at one very sort of big time person. The last year I was there, it was David Marsh, and they had that person do 4 or 5 different talks over the course of the weekend. But in any case, I mean, the cost to attend was easily over $1,000. And for anybody besides one of the best paid club swimming coaches in the country, it was significant. It was you know, a significant portion of a month's salary to attend. And that brings up another issue, which is, where is the money coming from to attend these clinics? How are teams set up? When you were on the ground there, I mean, what would you say, how many people did you talk to that said, oh, you know, my club is paying for this, versus people that were sort of self-funding their expedition out to these various clinics?
I think there's a lot of difference that we have to make here. Obviously there's like a big group of college coaches that attend the first few days, and the college coaches are supposed to have like their part of ask, and they all have budgets for this.
Yeah.
They have other stuff that they apply, so, where they send coaches. So I wouldn't really put them into some of them. If they may have a like combined team and they have six coaches, they may still be kind of close to what they can do, but those guys usually don't have an issue because it's part of their job. But that's really part of what they do. Then you move over to the club teams, where you see you have the US club coaches, and there's really, I guess it depends on team size. So you see like the bigger teams, they use it. Some of them bring their whole staff, and I think that's a really good thing to do, because they may go to talks in the morning, or they say, well, there's so many talks at the same day. If I were here on my own, I could never go to all the talks I may want to go. But if I bring another coach or two coaches with me, they can each go to a talk. And then in the afternoon or at the end of the day, we can sit together. We can speak about the stuff that we heard and have like maybe take an afternoon off and do like a preseason team meeting and get stuff done. And I think that's a really good thing. And a lot of those teams, I think they do have some kind of budget to do it. Not all of them may get everything paid through the club team. There may be a shared kind of thing where they pay some of themselves and some is the club team. And then you have all the little club teams where a single coach, it may be a part-time or full-time coach, maybe the only really paid coach on that team. And he's doing it, because if he's not doing it, there's not going to be any information on new stuff or new ideas or any kind of continued education going on at that team at all, because he's the one who has to do it. So those people go to the clinic so they get new ideas, or maybe they hear something that they can bring back to the teams. And those are the people that do pay themselves for the whole thing. So they pay to attend, they pay their way. And you know, you hear crazy stories, coaches driving almost 1,000 miles in the car because the plane ticket would be too expensive, and they drive 2 days to go to such a clinic, and they drive 2 days back. And obviously at ASCA you have a lot of the international coaches, and I think it's a little bit different in Europe or elsewhere in the world, where the club system is there, but you kind of pay your own way. That's kind of how it works. I at least I know in Switzerland, the coaches are doing what the federation is offering, and they're really inexpensive, but they're like an afternoon and a 1 day deal, and they're not really good things. I'm not like a really big fan. I don't try to attend them. I actually try to be the one who's teaching, because I think I get more by teaching and interacting with the people. But I know that all the coaches that I know from the Europe, if they go someplace, it comes out of their pocket. So you got a plan for it. I mean, I could myself allow to do this because over the last 6 years, whenever I could, I put as much money on a bank account that I knew I'm gonna use the money for this exact reason.
So I think we've covered that topic adequately. Let's talk about something that I think is maybe a little bit more forward-thinking when we look at this. You know, the clinics and clinics themselves are a model that's been around for a very long time. What kind of new options, what kind of innovation can we find in the continuing education area for coaches. What are some examples out there that you see, and maybe talk to some of the strengths and weaknesses of those?
Well, I think it's a really difficult question, because I think it's something where it's hard to actually bring innovation, because there's a really set idea on how those things should go. I've been talking with a couple of coaches lately, messaging back and forth, and I think one thing that we could do better, obviously with all the opportunities that we have that the internet provides us, could be a monthly, a bi-weekly, whatever, a meetup online where we say, well, that day, that time, if you're available, hey, join us. We're going to talk something. Maybe someone wants to present something. There's plenty of options how to do that. Anyone who want to, no matter where you are, you could join. There's a way to record that stuff and make it available somewhere. If you could not attend, and that could be totally free. I mean, we all have our setup. We can attend through a phone or through a computer. Most people are going to be able to do that. And that may be something that we're going to try to do with ProSwim workouts. I'm talking to a couple of people that may want to start it. Since I'm a computer science major, I'm looking kind of to this industry, how they do things, and I'm noticing they do, instead of the conference, they start to call it like meetups. So they try to have like more kind of local meetups, where they try to find groups of coaches. They could be, now that I'm in the Indianapolis area, maybe there's a group of four coaches and they try to meet on a weekly or on a monthly basis as well. And it may just be half an hour, and they meet at a bar, at the restaurant, and they talk about something. And if coaches that may be in the city at that time, they can join in and find out about it. I think that's thing that we could do. But I also think there's a way how we could change how we do the clinics. Like I said, I think GAME did a really good job in having a good balance between kind of like the classroom type of lectures, but making it really interactive, and then actually be in the gym and do stuff. And I know that wouldn't apply to like a freestyle, but why wouldn't we be around a pool? And maybe if we're in Washington, I mean, there's a lot of swim teams down there. One of the coaches brings in a swimmer in the afternoon, and maybe he's just demonstrating some things, how he works with the athlete and stuff like that. And we would have a lot of groups, I guess, because we couldn't have 800 coaches stand around the pool at the Washington Hilton. But there are other ways to do it. And one thing I noticed this time, also, I think what we're lacking is really that interaction. If you want to interact with other coaches, you have to make it your own. You have to go and grab the coach that you want to interact. You have to go and ask, hey, could I invite you for breakfast or for lunch? Would you be okay missing maybe the first part of the afternoon and just maybe talk with me for a while? I think there's a lot more opportunity to actually provide that opportunity at that event, where like the learning would be much more informal, but probably be twice as good.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, and that's an idea I've been toying around with as well. When you talk about ways to get coaches together online in between these things, because I think we all acknowledge that that it's really nice to be in person and to get that kind of socialization that you get in person. On the other hand, the internet gives us so many opportunities and so many inexpensive opportunities. And for a lot of coaches out there, I think they would put a huge value on being able to do some kind of ongoing continuing education during the year, something that they would not have to travel to attend, but would nevertheless give them some of that value and give them some of that ability to socialize, to be in a group with other people who are discussing the same topics or learning the same things. I think there's a ton of value there. And I know you talk about the in-pool version. That's something that the College Swim Coaches Association yearly clinic has always, I think, for, at least back to my memory, has featured actually taking a coach out into a pool with swimmers in the water and coaches able to watch. Because you know, I think too, what we're getting at here is that there are a lot of different ways, as we know as coaches, a lot of different ways that people learn. And yep. if your continuing education opportunity is not hitting all of them, then you're missing a lot of, yeah, of coaches.
And you know, I think the other thing, and I know it's hard, and you know, it's gonna take some time. Like we talked about, that change is kind of slow. It's gonna take some time for someone to really try to hit it if they want to do it. But what I feel like what we're missing as swim coaches is we still don't try to get outside of our community, outside of what we do. So it's all swimming. I feel like we could do a lot of better job for a lot of coaches that attend, like have like a nutrition track, a psychology track. You know, for someone like me, that may not be what we were looking for innovation, but if there was like a physiology track or something like that, because I didn't go to college and like I didn't get sports science. I know computers really well. I know a lot about swimming. I know a lot about the stuff because I'm reading books, but it's not the same reading stuff in a book and actually have someone talk to you. And that was something that I really enjoyed in Clearwater Beach this year. Dr. Joel Steger from Indiana University, he's working at the Doc Councilman Research Center there. He came there and he's a scientist and he likes swimming and he knows a lot about swimming, but he also knows a lot about how the body works and everything. And he was talking about that stuff, and I think probably more than a third I didn't really understand. I'm going to have to read through my notes and try to understand it, but he had a way of explaining some things that I didn't fully understand before, maybe that I now believe that I better understand, because he made the connection from like that classroom setting to my world, to the swimming world. And I think we're lacking that. We're still staying too much in our own little room instead of reaching out. And I think we can reach out. I mean, for club teams, there's so much how to manage a club. Like, it doesn't have to be someone who actually runs a club. You can learn from someone who doesn't know how to run a club, who runs a business, how to run a business. Because if you own a swim club, it's basically a business, even though it's a swim club. So I think that's where we can improve a lot also of the quality of those clinics.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, what you're reminding me of, and again, my continuing education this fall, something that I've referenced a little bit is actually that next week I'm headed out to Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm going to be watching Milt Milnes coach. And I had a chance to connect with him here when he was in New York City for something else. And he, first off, as I said on my previous podcast with Joel Rawlings, a great amount of what he says I do not understand. But that's part of why I enjoy learning from him, because it makes me hungry to sort of like, gosh, I got to figure that out. I've got to figure out what he's saying, because I know that there's something really valuable behind it. But one of the really insightful things that he said to me that has stuck with me since our last meeting was, you know, a 10% rule. Which is, he says he really only talks about 10% of sort of the top 10% of what he knows. And he says that specifically because then he knows he's not leading anyone astray. And I think you and I, we've both sort of talked about that as coaches, we have areas where we feel really strong, like we really know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then, like you bring up physiology, I also don't feel like I really know what I'm talking about when it comes to physiology. And that, to me, indicates that if I'm following a 10% rule, I shouldn't be too prescriptive when it comes to physiology, like, and physiology-based solutions. Because I just, you know, the likelihood that I tell someone something that's super wrong is too high. for me to justify saying something about it. That's again another thing, you know, that I was trying to get to when I was talking to Joel Rawlings last week, is like dry land. When it comes to dry land training, I know enough to know that a lot of stuff that we're doing in swimming doesn't seem like doesn't seem good to me, but do I know what to do or to tell people to do? Well, not exactly. That's one of the things I'm trying to work on, because I would like to be a lot more prescriptive and authoritative on things like that.
Yeah.
And I think I say bring this up just to say that there are a lot of opportunities. There are so many coaches out there, and if we could find out, if we could get them sort of talking about the top 10% of what they know, the stuff that they really, really feel sure about, we could crowdsource some pretty awesome learning for the other people whose Venn diagrams do not cross over into that area of knowledge.
Yeah. I agree, and we may have another guest soon on the podcast, another Chris.
Another Chris? You're Chris cheating on me? What is this?
So who may be able to tell us a little bit about something that he's working on that I think works kind of maybe towards some of that. But you know, that it's funny that you would bring that up with the 10%, because I think one of the critique I heard for the first time this year at ASCA was that a lot of people were talking, well, I think this guy is holding information back. Like on purpose. And I think that is funny that people would think that. Because I personally wouldn't think that. I probably think that it is going on. And in some cases, you know, for good reason, I can understand. But then at the same time, if you only have an hour and a half, there's really only so much you can talk about.
Right.
you're not going to tell your life story and what happened with your program in the last 10 years in an hour and a half. It's just not going to happen. So there's information that you're going to have to hold back just to kind of make sense in what you're presenting.
I don't entirely understand that criticism. I have known some people to play it a little too close to the vest. They're worried about people stealing, and I always think that stuff is very unjustified. That shows a very low level of self-confidence in what you're doing, that you think somebody can listen to you talk about it and immediately get up to your level of doing it. I mean, I always feel if. Thanks so much to Nico for sharing everything that he's learned over the last month. For more great swimming conversations, go to chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in downtown, coach.com. Check out the new comments section. Already people commenting in there, and so far nobody has said anything really, really bad. So I'm very happy about that. You can also find me, Chris DeSantis Coaching, on Facebook. Write me a message. Give me some feedback. Thanks for listening. See you next time.